This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday. Matt, Brett here today. Coming up in just a few minutes here, Denise Specht is going to join us, the president of Education Minnesota, the teachers union here in the state. Some stories out about the frustrating and the strain that's on our teachers right now. As a matter of fact, outside of nurses, doctors, and hospital staff, I would make an argument the most strained people in this country right now are teachers. And it's starting to break. And what I think... And I'll tell you what, I'll save this for most of this for after her interview. But I think what you're seeing is just the fact we have treated our working class in this country so poorly for so long that it's breaking, and people would rather just not work. And it's, you know, why would you want to work if all you're doing is getting minimum wages, no benefits, no future? You know, now that's not necessarily teaching, but it's kind of gone into all these different fields. And there used to be a lot of fields where you didn't think that this stuff would be, you know, hammering so hard, but it is. And we'll talk to her about the teachers, because I'll tell you what, the stress they're under, if you didn't read that Star Tribune story, it's pretty rough. Brett, how was your weekend?
Snowy. It was rainy and icy. Yes.
Well, it wasn't that bad.
I mean, was pretty slick when I was trying to get around Saturday night.
Well, how late were you out Saturday night?
It was about 11 o'clock I was coming home. So,
well, yeah. See, there's your problem. I went out at about 5 o'clock that evening. I hit the bridge over on Highway 7 over 494, and I was like, whoa, this is really slick. And that's what I was like, I'm going home. I'm not going to go on out and... you know, and get crazy. I actually have to admit, I am sore as a dog right now because I had to do something. Now, no one in my family besides myself really feels comfortable working with the leaf blower. And the leaf blower, you have to use that to do the kind of the gardens and the driveway and stuff like this. Well, we had the problem that we've talked about in regards to the climate change in the leaves. We had a lot of leaves that just had not fallen. So what we decided we went out there and we got up as many leaves as we can because there was a chance it was going to snow again today. And if it snowed again today, that would be tough because, you know, we have to get the leaves out for the city pickup. Of course, you know, here I am on a crutch. I got a crutch and a leaf blower. Yeah, it was delightful. Just delightful. We got the leaves up. Of course, Brett, the tree in front of our house that has been holding leaves 3 weeks longer than it should, the second that snow started to fly, every leaf fell out of that tree at once. Every single, so they're all right now. I mean, and my wife and my kids are basically like, it stays until spring, Dad. It's staying until spring.
Isn't that supposed to provide like nutrients for the grass or something?
Yeah, it kills it off, right? Nicely.
And there you go.
leaves down there, a nice coat of leaves. That'll take care of your grass right problem right there. No, you don't. It's okay to have a little bit out there, but you don't want too much.
Do you have a lot in your yard?
No, we got most of it up.
Okay.
But I got pretty mobile with my crutch and the leaf blower.
Wait, how did you pull this off?
Well, it's not like I was like Wile E. Coyote and launching myself down the street with the Acme Turbo leaf blower. I mean, it was a heavy duty one, but I managed to, you know, I had it in one hand and kind of just, the hardest part was just making sure I didn't fall into any little holes or anything like that in the yard.
Yeah, it's like that takes some skill to do that, actually, if you got your leaf blower in one hand and your crutch in the other arm, yeah.
My family heard that all weekend long. That took some skill for me to do that. And, of course, none of them said that. Brett, I appreciate it. You're now my son. All right, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's an absolute privilege to welcome back to the show the president of Education Minnesota, Denise Specht. She's kind enough to join us today to talk about the status of teachers in the state of Minnesota. Denise, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Oh, thanks for having me.
The story that was out in the Star Tribune, as long as some other stories that have come out, I think KSTP had a story as well. talks about this has been an incredibly rough year so far for teachers in Minnesota.
Oh, my goodness. It certainly has. You know, this is the third academic year that has been affected by COVID. So that's a lot. But I know that most educators, students, and parents started this academic year thinking, this is going to be it. It's going to be better. We're kind of turning the corner here. And I wish I had better news, but things are not good in our schools. Educators are at the breaking point. And as I go out and hear stories all over the state, it is super painful to hear how things are going for them right now.
It's what is interesting, and there's a lot of things, and obviously one of the things we've seen a lot of is angry parents screaming at teachers about face masks and mandates. I'll get to that in a little bit, but let's just talk the practicality of being a teacher. And one thing I did like about the Star Tribune story is they laid out the problem fairly cleanly. You have not only kids who, because of this third year now of dealing in a pandemic situation, especially with entire last school year within that the academic levels of a lot of kids is tracking behind, as well as also the social aptitude of the children are in some cases 2 years behind where they should be. And this is creating quite a bit. Let's talk a little bit about, obviously, the education element of it within the classroom is very easy to understand, but talk a little bit about the social element of that, because that's obviously something that's got to be quite concerning for teachers as they're trying to deal with these kids and get them ready for that next stage.
For sure. You know, educators are really concerned about social and emotional being. They know that they want their students to be as healthy as possible, mind and body, and that's how they're going to learn better. So that should be the focus. And, you know, educators are concerned about their own mental health. They need to be at their very best so that they can be the best educator that they can be. But unfortunately, what we're seeing is that we have many districts who are saying, you know, let's focus on the kids. Let's build those relationships. Let's make sure that we're connecting with the children and knowing where they're at. Yet, we're finding that there's not a lot of time provided to do that, not enough staff to be able to do that. You know, we were already short on counselors and social workers even before the pandemic. And these are the kinds of people that we need in our schools now more than ever. But it's as business as usual, as you noted. You know, we have first graders who spent kindergarten online. We have ninth graders who never went through eighth grade in a brick-and-mortar school. So we can't pretend that a year didn't happen, and yet we're finding that it's kind of like business as usual. Quick open the books, get everybody caught up. We've got tests coming up in the spring, and let's just go, go, go. And it's incredibly frustrating.
One of the things which I find to be interesting is, and I was, you know, I was a parent volunteer with my kid's PTO. I was president of the PTO in elementary school 1 year. And one of the things you learn very quickly is that there is no universal standard, and that you know, some parents are fantastic. They're working with their kids. Some parents don't really do that much. And there is also another thing which when I've talked to teachers, which has been an incredible concern, is this. As you talk about that three-year gap now, third school year that the pandemic's been involved, and you have this now stretch of students within one classroom where you always had some A students and maybe some, you know, C or D students within the classroom, but now it's, oh, no, we have kids now who clearly really hadn't learned anything from last year, so I've got kids from two that basically are an education standard from 2 years previous versus some kids who are great, whose parents have you know, been working with them. They're there. They're up to speed. And so that gap of educational aptitude as well is just getting wider and wider.
Well, and I think that the vacancies and the staffing shortages that we're seeing in our schools isn't helping any of that. You know, when you have education positions, whether they're teacher or paraprofessional, that go unfilled, that just means that, you know, the work is being spread out over, you know, fewer people. For example, if you've got a substitute that can't come in to cover for a teacher's class, you have other teachers filling in those holes or taking on those students. So that just means that the teachers then aren't spending their time on their own kids or their own lesson plans or being able to do their own work. So at the end of the day, you just have people stretched too thin, not being able to attend to, you know, the students or the work that they're trying to do. And we're essentially driving people out of the profession. Mm-hmm.
We also are kind of skipping past the 800-pound gorilla in the room. It's still a pandemic, too. And regardless of whatever your profession is, going into a work environment is somewhat stressful still. We are still seeing surging numbers here in the state. And as any teacher will tell you, you get into a classroom environment, it's kind of a super spreader event sometimes, depending on the regional cold or flu or, you know, cough that's going around. So there is that concern, you know, and quite tragically in just, you know, we've had a tremendous amount of loss of staff this school year already. I think what was it? Is it 12 people so far have died? Teachers and academic administrators have died in schools since this pandemic began?
Well, what's scary to me is we have more educators who have unfortunately passed away in just these first 2.5 months of the school year as we did all last year. You know, we know more about COVID now than we did back then. You know, vaccines are available. We know what works, the masking, the social distancing, washing hands, and, you know, when needed, quarantining or closing down for a while so that we can, you know, make sure that everybody is healthy. So I guess it just boggles my mind that we know so much now and we still have, you know, people dying from COVID. So we have to do this better. And, you know, like I said earlier, you know, stretching people to the point of exhaustion or, you know, asking people to come in when they're sick because they can't, you know, cover their classes, there aren't any substitutes, is not doing anybody any good. And I would say a big difference this year than last year is that last year, you know, every school district had a plan. You know, times were different. We had the governor who had emergency powers. We had stronger guidance coming out of the Minnesota Department of Health and the Minnesota Department of Education. But when the legislative session ended and those emergency powers were taken out of the equation here, it has kind of become the wild, wild west. There are some school districts without plans. There are, you know, places in the state where, you know, educators are not quite sure what the school is looking for or when they will have to make any changes. You know, who is really paying attention to that? Lack of planning, lack of a plan is causing some anxiety.
And this was something that was kind of known when the governor gave up his emergency powers, is that then you are basically dependent on the individual school district to have the plan. Some school districts, fantastic. They've led the way. Other school districts, not as well. Can I ask you something? You'd said something. I want to follow up on it. As hard as this is to believe, I know you might not have the exact numbers of this, but how common is the sick teacher getting called back into school to teach while sick because they can't find a replacement for their class for that day?
Well, you know, I don't have the numbers myself, but it is common when, like, let's just say maybe somebody is homesick with their own child, or maybe they have a doctor appointment, or they're home for a personal situation. I do know educators who have been called by their administrator to say, are you sure you can't come in? Is there any way, you know, you can take care of whatever it is that you're taking care of and come back? There are just not enough substitutes or bodies to fill in all of the spots. That is how desperate we're at right now.
Denise Specht is joining us, of course, president of Education Minnesota. Denise, let's get to the ugliness of this. This has also come with a fairly aggressive, community standard in some cases, where, teachers have been yelled at, teachers have been threatened, teachers have been screamed at by parents because, God forbid, they're requiring a kid to wear a mask in the classroom or, they're, kind of encouraging vaccination. That obviously as well, and I know that's something that's hit the school boards quite a bit, but in regards to it, there have been stories where teachers themselves are getting yelled at. This hyper-aggressive society we're living in right now, that's also playing a role, I think, in it. It was always there. I mean, I have friends who work out in rural Minnesota, and before the pandemic, we're talking about how they were vilified by the conservatives out in rural Minnesota as liberal promotions and stuff like this, even like the third and fourth graders. And then when they decide to leave those schools, they were like, why are you leaving? It's like, well, because of you. You've not been very welcoming. But that was before the pandemic. Yeah, that as well has got to be playing a large role in the frustration and somewhat near depression that some of these teachers are experiencing right now.
It is definitely a polarizing environment in some places. We're seeing teachers, paraprofessionals, bus drivers being blamed for schools being closed last year. It wasn't them. It was actually COVID that closed schools. Let's be clear here. We have, as you said, educators being blamed for masking requirements, demands to see their lesson plans, to be able to see every single book in their classroom library, to know what is in their curriculum. Tell me if you are going to be teaching about race or equity. There are a lot of other things happening besides all of the other demands of the job, catching kids up, making sure that they're okay after COVID, trying to teach, even though you might have other classes, students in your rooms because they couldn't find a sub for them. It is becoming very demanding, exhausting, stressful. And all of these things are driving people out of the profession. My worry is that if we don't pay attention and listen to the educators, don't have to listen to me, talk to any of them. I hear this all over the state. If we don't listen to the educators, I'm worried that we're not going to have enough of them, and our kids deserve better.
What's interesting, this final question for you on this, is this somewhat of an apex, a pinnacle of the continuing trend? When I was a kid and I was in school, I'm 53 years old. When I was a kid in school, my parents basically let me know, teacher's always right, you're going to be wrong, just deal with it. And today, it's and there's nothing wrong with, having more discussion about, certain things. But now there's a standard where no matter if something goes wrong in the class, a kid fails a test, a kid fails a grade, that it's the teacher's fault. It's not the student. It's not the parents. It's not anyone else. There has been the shift of blame that's happened. I got to believe as well that this has been, it seems to be almost, this is the perfect storm, but this has been a storm that's been coming. We've seen this as the teachers have become more and more vilified over the years.
Yeah, it has been happening over time. All of this is leading to a lot of stress. I guess I would say that what we're seeing in some places is very intentional. The critical race theory and the outside money, the wealthy billionaires who are funding these anti-CRT conversations all around the state, I do believe this is part of a bigger agenda. Whether it's political, that's one thing. I think, they're trying to stir up their base and they're going to keep that going all the way through election 2022. But there is an effort to dismantle public education and to privatize and monetize the work that is going on in our public schools. So I don't want to sound like a overly dramatic here, but I do believe that a lot of this is very intentional.
Yeah, I would make an argument too. I will agree with that. But and you and I could go on a nice long conversation from that point. But I know you're busy. You have your busy schedule. Bless your organization, the teachers of the state. I said this before at the beginning of the show. Outside of doctors and nurses, I don't know of a group of professionals that have been under a larger amount of stress this year than the teachers have. Bless you all. You guys, I think, are doing a magnificent job. And you know, I think everyone should go out there and thank their kids' teachers today, because that's not something that's happening nearly enough in this state as we speak.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned that. Today starts American Education Week, actually. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate American Education Week than to reach out to an educator that you know, your own children's educators, and check in with them, see what they're doing, and see what they need. I think that it would be greatly appreciated.
Denise Specht, once again, it's the Education Minnesota. She's the president over there. Thank you so very much for the time. I really do appreciate it, and all my best to all the teachers in the union there. I really do appreciate every one of them.
Thank you for having me once again. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. I'll piggyback on what she's saying. Don't fool yourself. There is a massive amount of money right now being spent to try to destroy our current public schools to where the option of privatizing them is considered. And I want to remind of everything. As someone posted a picture this weekend of a prison, and it was a voicemail left for a family member, and they were told there was a voicemail that was from their prisoner, the person who was in prison. There is a voicemail available to them. It would only cost them $5 to access said voicemail. Now, the first thing, and someone says, what the heck is all this about? When did this happen? And I said, this is the outcome of privatized prisons. And it'd be easy for all the people who are conservatives, you know, and lugheads to sit there and say, well, they shouldn't have done that crime. That's not punishing the prisoner. The prisoner is still in prison. They're being punished for what their crime was. No, the $5 charge to hear a voicemail is a privatized prison company punishing the family member of the prisoner by basically bankrupting them just to hear a Merry Christmas or Happy Birthday. That is what's going on. And if you think that privatizing things that are being run will end up better, you're a fool. You're an absolute fool, because there comes something that does not exist in our current public school system that becomes the priority, and that is profit. And the minute all of a sudden you put profit out there, all of a sudden lunches go down and variety of classes disappears and class sizes explode. And it's all about teaching a standardized test, and that's all it becomes. There are school districts, and if you read about this, there are school districts which have become privatized. And the kids that come out of those schools are wildly ill-prepared for college, because all they have been done their entire schooling career is be taught a test, which is arbitrary at best and has not given them any critical thinking skills whatsoever. And so they get to college, and most of these kids are dropping out because they can't figure out how college works, because they haven't been prepared for that. Good public schools prepare you for college. And I see it in my kids' public schools. They're fantastic, and they have been prepping my kids for college. No, there are a few things that the Republicans have looked at as cash cows. The post office, they've looked at the privatization of the space program, they look at public schools, they look at these things and they say, how can we basically privatize this? Military actions. My gosh, how many military actions are now being carried out by, you know, for hire, for profit, you know, mercenaries? More than you think they are. No, this is about getting money out of the public funds and giving it to private people, basically because there's a wealthy person that owns that company that can make a heck of a lot of profit off of doing so. And you lose all sorts of quality when that happens. She's right. Denise Specht is right. They are trying to kill public education. And the reality is they would do it. They would, the Republicans in the state would have done it already if not for the Democrats holding their ground. Go to some of these states where the privatization of the public schools has taken place and look at the horrific quality of public schools they have. Dear Lord, Mississippi. Go take a look at Mississippi is the one I saw quite a bit. Just the quality of education you get in those schools does not exist. They don't have teachers. They have people that went through a six-week certification course. They've got basically for-profit companies bringing in their testing guides, and that's all you do is sit for 6 hours each day and practice the test over and over and over again. And it doesn't. There's no band. There's no drama. There's no choir. There's no advanced programs. There's no robotics team. There's nothing. It's just teach the test. That's it. And if you think that that's quality, well, you're fooling yourself. You have the reason why this has been such a stressful year already on these teachers is they see what this pandemic has really done on the base level with the students. And when you see kids who are supposed to be a fourth grader but have not basically gotten to a point where they're beyond a second grader's capacity for English or math, that's frustrating because all of a sudden you've got to do a tremendous amount of remedial work with each individual kid just to get them up to the point where you can start the class in fourth grade. And you've got people yelling at teachers. You got people screaming at teachers. Thank teachers. Thank them. For goodness sakes, they are the front lines. And I didn't have time to ask Denise Specht about the frontline worker pay. But, you know, just giving that to nurses and doctors, I mean, they deserve it too. But at the same time, so do the teachers, so do the grocery store workers, so do truck drivers. A lot of frontline people that were asked to get back out there into the front lines, a lot of them deserve to get some of that benefit. 952-946-6205. I'll tell you what, we'll take a break. Come on back. Gary, I'll get your call after the break. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. We'll have Denise up on Spotlight Interview here before too long. You can go catch that. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205, Gare Bear, Gary in Minneapolis. Welcome on in, Gary.
Hello, how you doing, pal?
All right, man.
I just got to mention about privatization. They privatized our Medicare now, and Social Security is on the hit parade, you know, if they get control of Washington again, because all these investment corporate investment places, they want to make money off our government, Social Security. That's why Republicans never like government for us, just the rich. And so, like in the 30s, the Depression, we were the only major country that didn't have Social Security basis for people out of work and all that, or retirees. And it was just terrible, I heard. Anyways, with privatized Medicare now, they're going to tell you all the, they're advertising all the time. They took that money out of our Medicare to subsidize insurance companies to advertise how much they do for us. But we'll see. If you have experience, bad experience with insurance companies now, that's what they're going to do to our Medicare and Social Security also.
Thanks, Gare. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I will say this. The day of reckoning has come for the American business model. This truly is an offshoot of what happened, started with Reagan. And that, you know, Reagan's mentality was stop paying, you know, keep paying people for inflation, keep wages low. You know, I mean, back when I was going to high school, you could go get a job at a McDonald's, which was paying really well back then. But the rate of salary hasn't changed. And so as inflation has gone up, those jobs have gotten worse and worse and worse. And it's not just service industry jobs. The trucking industry has been gutted. That's the reason why they can't find people that want to be truckers, is because, you know, that's, you know, basically it's minimum wage on wheels. And people screaming at you because our GPS shows you're running 15 minutes behind. That couldn't have cost you $100. That sort of thing. You got teachers are just being, you know, annihilated. Nurses and doctors, my goodness. We should, I can't think of a single worker class of people. Teachers, nurses, janitors, grocery store workers, fast food workers. I can't think of one who doesn't deserve an immediate pay raise, more benefits, a better quality of life. And this country, damn it, should be providing that. We are the United States of America, for goodness sakes. We are supposed to be the shining city on the hill. We're not supposed to be we don't really have to be that good. When you have countries who are, you know, Estonia, Ireland, San Marino, who have better healthcare systems than ours, when you have a better quality of education in countries that have one, you know, half our country, our population, a third of our population, what is the problem? It's because we have a class of people, the ultra wealthy, who basically look at everything now at how we can pull money out of it. How do we get money out of that and into our pockets? And this is the reckoning. This is the day of reckoning. People just don't want to work for these crud wages, for these bad, you know, benefits, non-existent benefits in some cases. I had a friend who was working a restaurant, and they basically, we were talking about how last year we were hearing stories of, you know, people forcing people on to work on lines, and how, well, I said something ignorant. I said, oh, well, I hear it's better now. He goes, it's not better. It's the same as it always was. Manager might be a little nicer to you, but you're still in a godforsaken, unhealthy work environment. You're not getting paid very well. Because these people just do not want, they have a third boat they're trying to pay for. They don't want to basically go on out there and have to you know, basically cut back on their benefits for something else, for their workers. And you're seeing that with these pity party signs on the door. No one wants to work anymore. My personal favorite was, you think you deserve, you know, if you deserve $3 more per hour if you work 200 times as hard. So, you know, twice as hard. So basically, if you're getting $10 an hour, he'll give you $13 an hour if you work twice as hard. Not $20 an hour, which if you did the basic math, would be the number you would be at. $20 an hour. No, I'll just give you $3 an hour to work twice as hard. They can't even see it themselves. They don't even see how broken their system is. If you give up every weekend and every weeknight and you work until close every night and you never once say anything negative in here, I'll think of giving you an extra dime an hour. Please. And that hearty screw you're hearing, that comes for all the workers. So the question is this, is that, you know, you've built your business, you've gotten your money out of it. If you're done, then you can shut down and sit there and say, no one wanted to work for me, which is far more about you than anyone else. Or you can start paying people a better wage. Start being nice to people. Oh, God. I mean, the staffing problems they're going to have with teachers out in rural Minnesota. Holy God. And there's going to be a lot of people saying, you got to let someone with a certificate come in and be a science teacher. Please. That's not going to happen. Maybe you shouldn't just be jerks. Maybe you should just be nice to the teachers. Then they'll actually stay on your staff. Because that's what happens in some school districts. And you know what? They don't seem to have the problem that you guys have out there. Speaking of education, two other stories here. School bus drivers, talking about another group that salaries are way behind. School bus drivers in Minneapolis Public Schools voted unanimously to go to strike if mediation does not produce results. The bus drivers say they're not being offered adequate compensation and are concerned about safety and retention during the severe bus driver shortage. There's going to be a mediation session December 1st. The drivers cannot legally go on strike until 45 days after the first mediation session. Minneapolis Public Schools says it's committed to reaching an agreement through the mediation process and is working to ensure the bus service for students is not interrupted. But you got to, you know, it's like everything. Everyone deserves to get paid more. They just do. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. One other quick story here. Dennis Peterson, the longtime superintendent of Minnetonka Public Schools, is retiring at the end of the school year. Peterson has been the superintendent of the district for nearly 21 years. An email is his district touts his tenure, saying he took the district at a time when enrollment was declining and has built the district into one known for its excellence. Did you guys give the bell and the wheel back from the USS Minneapolis? You remember that? The VFW guy, or not, was it the VFW guy? I can't remember who it was. Someone who was supposed to keep track, you know, protect that monument to the soldiers that was on Bede-Makoska, decided to steal the wheel and steal the bell and gave them to Minnetonka High School. And their idea of supporting the troops was apparently having the bell in the weight room, so when a sweaty jock bench pressed more than they ever had, they'd go over and smack the bell like it was some sort of honor thing. They no longer do that. Apparently, they no longer wheel it out. They apparently have learned the lesson of their ways, and, oh, that's a veteran's tribute. We can't be out there putting sweaty jock hands on it, so... They apparently did that, but they're supposed to have given it back to the city of Minneapolis, the Park and Recs Board, who were supposed to put them back up. Did they get back? I gotta know, Dennis. Did you give the bell on the wheel back? Because as a veteran, I don't want I'm pretty sure most people who are veterans do not really care for their bell and wheel being at a high school as some sort of weight training success story. Okay. So I want to make sure, before you leave, can we make sure he didn't put the bell and the wheel in his bag before he walked out of the building?
I did look at the Bring Me the News article. They did give it back in May, finally.
Finally, they did give it back.
Yeah.
I heard they were still thinking about giving it back, but they officially did give it back in May.
Yeah, that's the headline. Minneapolis Parks to get historic bell wheel back from Minnetonka High School.
To get. Did they get?
We'll give it to you. We just won't say when.
Sometime. Decorating my bathroom right now in my house. I'm hypothesizing. I'm hypothesizing, for God's sakes. I have no idea where the bell and the wheel are. What I can tell you is they should be out at a memorial for the troops, but yeah, apparently not so much. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. We'll get to the three-headed dragon that is Bannon, Alex Jones, and Rittenhouse. We'll get to those trial cases coming up here in just a moment. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. You are somebody that I don't know. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. There's been a little bit of news in regards to Steve Bannon, and as he has surrendered to authorities. Indicted Trump ally Steve Bannon has been ordered to turn over his passport ahead of his trial and contempt charges. Politico's Kyle Chaney reports that the court has ordered Bannon to surrender his passport ahead of his trial as a way to prevent him from trying to evade justice. Chaney also reports that Bannon will be required to submit to court supervision as he awaits trial, with provisions that include checking in with a pretrial services office weekly. Although Bannon has to surrender his passport, he's not scheduled to be formally arraigned until Thursday, November 18th at this point. I will say it is kind of funny. He's blaming his lawyer. He turned himself in to police on Monday. And talking to Bannon's appearance, MSNBC's Nicole Wallace and former Senator Claire McCaskill mocked Trump for making someone who constantly disheveled as his White House top political strategist. Bannon is apparently blaming a former lawyer for his decision to not testify before the January 6th committee. We're giving him a lot of attention. Hopefully it goes away quickly. My guess is his defense is, well, he'll try to snivel out of it. The reality is this, is he tries to sit there and say, these people made the biggest mistake. You're not going to Mr. Smith goes to Washington this there, Steve. You're not going to be able to do that. You're going to end up good. You're going to end up being in pretty big trouble because the reality is you're pretty much dead to rights. You were supposed to go and testify. You didn't. They convened a grand jury. They agreed. Your argument's going to be, I didn't want to, or I had bad legal advice. Well, at the end of the day, you're still responsible. So, a Connecticut court handed down a sweeping win for the families of eight victims of Sandy Hook massacre against right-wing broadcaster Alex Jones. That also broke today. A Superior Court judge ruled Monday that Jones was guilty by default because he refused to turn over his financial records and other documents ordered by the courts in the defamation case filed by the parents of eight people killed in the 2012 mass shooting, which his conspiracy theorists claimed was a false flag by the U.S. government to confiscate firearms, reported by the New York Times. By the way, how's that gone? Oh, that's right. We haven't done that. Oh, yeah. Jones claimed the families of the 20 first graders and six educators killed in the shooting were actors taking part in the scheme, and the Sandy Hook plaintiffs claimed he profited from spreading lies about his murders. He also has lost three defamation cases in Texas, and juries in both states will determine how much money he must pay in damages in addition to court costs. Yeah, he doesn't really have a leg to stand on there in regards to they're going to take everything he's got. I mean, and they should, for goodness sakes. I mean, he's just a horrible human being. And he deserves to, he absolutely deserves to get, be in debt for the rest of his life. Absolutely. Finally, I will mention in the Rittenhouse case, and by the way, I posted this a little earlier. In the Rittenhouse case, when we talked about Chauvin, Derek Chauvin, the guy, the police officer who murdered George Floyd in the streets. When we talked about that, we had Jack Rice on the air before the verdict was read. And I mean, it was the day before. And Jack said, I don't know if they've got enough here. And, it comes down to whether or not they convinced him that he was, out of control per se. And so there was a question of whether or not, even now that we're past that trial and we got the guilty verdicts, we should remember that up until that point, even smart legal people like Jack Rice were saying, well, it could go either way, that you can't say for sure. And I remember I was just so happy it did went the right way. In the Rittenhouse case, the thing which is so crazy, I have yet to talk to anyone that hasn't basically said, well, clearly the judge is making it to where Rittenhouse is going to get off, not guilty. And I've actually talked to multiple people who have said they suspect that even if Rittenhouse is found guilty, the judge will throw out the verdict and declare him not guilty and try to walk away from that. And that would be, I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. I mean, I'm surprised. I mean, it seems as if the judge wants to go down and give Kyle a hug every time he sees him. And it's just disgusting. The judge today tossed out a misdemeanor. This was the final arguments were happening today. The defense's entire argument was prosecutors, liar. They're liars, liars, liars. Everyone else is lying, not the video. Don't look at the video. Everyone else is lying, that sort of thing. The reality is that the fix is in. I mean, the fix is in this case. It has to be. It clearly has to be. I look at some of these rulings. Today, the judge tossed out a misdemeanor gun charge against Rittenhouse because before jury deliberations were set to begin, District Court Judge Bruce Schroeder accepted a defense motion to dismiss one of the counts of possession of a dangerous weapon for a person under 18 just before closing arguments were to begin. Schroeder says he dismissed the charge because the length of the rifle Rittenhouse carried the night had killed two demonstrators showed he had not violated the law, which is so poorly written. Rittenhouse's lawyers have tried throughout the trial to get the misdemeanor charges dismissed. The 18-year-old Rittenhouse faces reckless charges there. The prosecutor basically looked at it and says, that's not what the law says. But the judge basically made up his own version of the law just so he could throw it out. I mean, this guy is just doing everything in his power to make sure the Rittenhouse never serves a day in trial. And this is the most compromised judge I've ever seen in my entire life. I've never seen anything like this. I'm surprised he isn't strapping on his knee pads for Kyle right now. Seriously. It's disturbing. At the end of the day, the thing which is really going to scare me, and if I'm in Wisconsin, you should be scared to death. If this trial goes as I think it will, as it sure seems to be going, what the verdict is going to be is this. If people are protesting in Wisconsin that anyone can open fire on them and kill them, if, say, there's a riot going on and six blocks away someone has broken into a store, some guy can go by a group of protesters six blocks away from them and gun them all down. And the argument's going to be, well, he was in his right. Kyle Rittenhouse, he was in his right. He had the right to go do that. You are a fool if you don't think in Wisconsin that if you're protesting something, someone's going to shoot you. They're going to shoot you and kill you and say, can I have the judge that Kyle Rittenhouse had? Because if Kyle Rittenhouse's judge is available, oh, he'll let me give you a back rub. I know this has been hard on you to be accused of murder. Dear Lord. I won't be going to Wisconsin anytime soon. Sweet Jesus. And when the next massacre happens, I want everyone to go to that judge and say, it's on your head, sir. Hour two of the show is up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. I can't tell you how happy I am that Alex Jones is going to go down. I really can't. I remember terrified, going to get my kids off the school bus when Sandy Hook happened. I remember just sitting there, just get them off the bus, and just hugging them uncontrollably and taking them home. And I just, the thought of this, a psychopath. And the crazy part about this is that as opposed to believe something we see on basically a weekly basis in this country, a mentally compromised individual gets easy access to a legally purchased gun and opens fire on people. As opposed to believe the story that gets played out every freaking single week in this country, it was a false flag. They're gonna confiscate all of our guns. That was 9 years ago. How many guns have been confiscated? Oh, that's right. Obama actually expanded gun usage on parks. Trump didn't do anything to stop guns. And here we are. Your entire argument is stupid because of just time. None of it makes any sense. Meanwhile, every week we get someone mentally compromised in this country who just opens fire on people. But as opposed to believe that could have possibly happened in Newtown, I will say this, Brett, breaking story. And dear Lord, another shooting in Aurora, Colorado. Police are investigating after six teenagers were injured in a shooting at a park near Aurora Central High School on Monday. The victims, ages 14 to 17, have been taken to the hospital. Police are searching for the victim, or for the suspect, who is no longer in the park, but they did not give a description currently. So, that is a developing story. Well, obviously, there'll be more on that to come. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll talk about the Minnesota coronavirus update. I got a lot of stuff to get to with that, but I've got a story of an individual who had an interesting night over at MSP. A Minneapolis man now faces criminal charges over a violent overnight outburst at MSP International Airport. Now, not the same person that blew up at the Guthrie Theater. You see that story? the individual who went crazy in the audience at the Guthrie on Friday night, and they had to delay this show for a half hour before cops come down there and drag him out of the play?
I did not, but who does that at the Guthrie?
At the Guthrie!
Come on.
Well, and she's screaming, apparently, that Christmas Carol is a Shakespearean piece. Charles Dickens.
I enjoy Shakespeare's version of Christmas Carol.
Shakespeare's Grease was just fantastic, wasn't it? God, I loved Grease by Shakespeare. It was fantastic. Where art thou, Rizzo? This is not the same person, believe it or not. And this does take a few twists and turns. So this is over at MSP. Charges filed through the against Frank Towers. Frank accused the 44-year-old of numerous instances of inappropriate behavior during the early hours of November 12th, including threatening to kill a TSA agent, attacking police officers, stripping naked, and headbutting TV screens. Oh, when was the last time we had a good old-fashioned naked guy headbutting TVs? Oh, we haven't had that in a while.
That wasn't the only activity he was up to.
No, it doesn't. Don't spoil it. Don't spoil it. Towers was charged. Towers was charged in Hennepin County District Court Friday with fourth-degree assault against a peace officer and threats of violence, both of which are felonies. The charges note there are separate criminal charges pending against Towers, all either assault or domestic assault allegations stemming from Olmsted County. Towers made his first court appearance in connection with the airport incident on Monday morning. According to the charges, Towers made first contact with TSA agents and police around 4:15 a.m. on November 12th while in the Skyway checkpoint area of MSP Airport. He began screaming he was going to kill TSA agents and grabbed a stanchion line post. Is that one of those posts that they have the little strings that come out of that they kind of use to block off and create paths?
Oh, it's got to be one of those things. Wow.
So he grabs one of these, starts swinging it around and throwing it at TSA workers.
Is he a professional wrestler using this thing as a weapon?
Hey, Thor is here for a flight. A flight. Thor is on a flight. Airport police officers approached him, told him to stop. Towers responded by saying he didn't have to stop. It's a free country. After Towers refused to back down, officers used a stun gun on him. He then swung his arms up over his head while trying to hit an officer, but he never actually made contact with anyone. Backup arrived, and the officers were able to physically take him into custody. Towers continued to fight back while law enforcement attempted to handcuff him. Surveillance video shows Towers' erratic behavior began earlier at about 3:10 a.m. when he was caught on camera punching and headbutting TV screens, then removing his clothes and masturbating. Are you sure this is our concourse? I don't know. Are you sure? Oh, God. Just when you thought airplane travel couldn't get worse. Oh, God. Oh, dear Lord. Let's go back to the $4 coffee place.
Imagine you're at the airport, you're on your red-eye flight since this is 3 a.m., and you run into this guy when you're already dead tired.
Well, someone's got some energy. Someone's up and at him. Oh, sorry. About an hour later, that's when he took off his clothes again, redressed, threw a chair, and approached the TSA air employees in the Skyway. His ensuing behavior, I'm going to guess either he was on too much medication or he needed some medication. And that's going to be the one of the two of them. His ensuing behavior, including the throwing of a stanchion and the attempted attack on officers, can also be seen in the video. He was booked into Hennepin County Jail at around 5:40 a.m. In the Olmsted County cases, Tower is accused of throwing a knife at a roommate, then hitting him with a hammer April 4th, 2020, then telling investigators he should have killed the victim. On May 19th, 2018, hitting a house guest on the side of the head with a hammer, then throwing items at responding officers on the scene, including a fire extinguisher, then spitting on, then later throwing urine-soaked toilet paper at deputies while he's being held in Olmstead County Jail in June of 2018. Towers has been found incompetent to stand trial in June of 2020 and was civilly committed with regular competency evaluation scheduled. Wow. He, like I said, my guess is going to be is there is a need for medication and he does not want to take it or has not been prescribed it. But that would be my guess. That because, but he does like his, he likes hammer time, doesn't he?
Hammering, yeah.
Twice he's attacked people with hammers. Duh.
You know what hurts the most? I mean, well, obviously well, getting hit in the head with a hammer, but who headbutts a TV and comes away unscathed?
Well, I don't think we can. I think we can honestly say this guy probably was scathed at some point. Okay, I think the scathing
well,
happened.
Still enough to throw the thing at the police after he headbutted a.
I've stripped naked. I've headbutted a TV. You know what time it is? Time for a little self pleasure. That's right.
And then the Thor impression. Then
the Thor impression. Wow.
Stanchion at the cops. Yeah.
This was at 4 in the morning. 3 and 4 in the morning in that airport. Wow. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Like I said, just when you didn't think airline travel could get worse. Monday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 5,266 newly reported cases, zero newly reported deaths, but I'll come back to that. The state's COVID-19 death toll is 8,996. There are zero newly reported deaths today because deaths were not processed on Veterans Day, on the Veterans Day holiday. Details of newly reported deaths will resume tomorrow. The health department said on Monday, and my guess is going to be that number is going to be fairly astronomical and high. As of November 11th, the state reported that 3,530,246 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while 3,314,412 people have completed the vaccine series. The state has administered 665,218 third dose booster shots. For 1 second. I got to shuffle through my briefs here. I'm just going to, there it is. Through November 12th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 1,282, up from 1,245 on Friday. Of those hospitalized, 311 people were in intensive care, 971 were in non-ICU care. The 1,282 COVID patients is the most Minnesota's had since December 14th of 2020, when there were 1,304 people with COVID-19 hospitalized. The 311 ICU patients are the most since there were 319 on December 13th, approaching the state record of 399 set on December 1st. If you go to Bring Me the News, they actually have the map, which shows, I mean, with this heightened amount of ICU beds being used, the availability. And once again, it's pretty darn stark. Zero ICU staffed ICU beds are available in the entire northeastern part of the state, Duluth and the entire Arrowhead region. Zero. One is available in the northwestern part of the state, which is basically Bemidji, Baudette, the Lake of the Woods, all the way over to East Grand Forks, Thief River Falls. That sort of thing. So I want to make sure we understand this. The entire northern tier of Minnesota right now has one staffed ICU bed. One. The central St. Cloud area has got two. So for the St. Cloud area, the east central part of the state, the northwestern part of the state, and the northeastern part of the state, there's a total of three staffed ICU beds. For every car crash victim, heart attack victim, stroke victim, and COVID victim. Three. There's eight in Minneapolis, St. Paul, which is even more bizarre considering how many hospitals we have here. 10 in the southeastern part of the state, which is 4.5%. No other part of the state has more than five. There's five in the west central part of the state. I'm going to guess that's Moorhead and south from there. There are three available in the very southeastern part of the state and four available in the south central part of the state. Put it all together, 18, 20, 21, 26, 29, 33. 33 total staffed ICU beds in the entire state of Minnesota, a state with 5.6 million people in it. Son of a 33 total staffed ICU beds in the entire state of Minnesota. And guess what? You're going I know it's going to it's going to be a spoiler alert. Guess where a lot of this is coming from? Right now it's coming from a certain part of the state. I'll tell you what. I'll keep it a surprise. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. I'll strip down, headbutt the TV in the studio here, and, well, get around to some serious business in just a moment. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. You know I really want to see you when you know I might not. Maybe he was trying to get down Concourse C. You ever been to Concourse C at MSP? That's that one that runs from the main building all the way back out to Highway 5. They got the tram that runs down there. And you got to find something to preoccupy yourself.
You accomplished that, didn't you?
What if I was to headbutt the TV while naked? And speaking of being naked, hello there. Hello, my baby. Hello, my darling. I mean, I'm presuming he was heading for the Delta Airlines Sky Club. I mean, Delta does not want to be dragged into this story. Delta,
no, I don't think
no, there's
going
to be a cease and desist order from the Delta Airlines.
Delta's going to be sponsoring this segment. No,
sorry, Delta. But, man, that's a long concourse. Yeah, and if you've ever been down there at night, there's nothing open down there.
Oh, I mean, 3 or 4 in the morning, what else are you going to do? I mean,
you're going to go to the Hardee's for the $9 burger, or are you just going to strip down naked, headbutt TVs, and, you know, self-gratify? I mean, that's what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. That's just wholesome American values right there.
What do you do if you're the first security officer to respond?
Why was this guy going for a flight? Where were
that's
you
another
going?
Question. To where was
were
he
you going? I'm going to Provo, Utah. Really? Wow, I did not see that one coming. No, Provo, you say. Wow, that is a night and a half. That's better. That's better than the woman blowing up over the Guthrie Theater. And I love the Guthrie. And I don't. That's they don't deserve that. But this kind of that took away the thunder. Well, never mind. No, I gotta stop talking. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. There is no worse place to be in the country right now than Minnesota when it comes to high levels of COVID-19 transmission. Go, team, go! Renowned University of Minnesota epidemiologist Michael Osterholm said Minnesota is currently in a very dark place in regards to the pandemic. Right now in Minnesota, we happen to be, unfortunately, in the worst place to be in the country right now. We have the highest incidence of COVID in any state in the country right now, Osterholm said. 67 cases per 100,000 population today here. New Mexico's at 65, Colorado's at 62. So while they have gotten more attention, the situation in Minnesota right now is actually very dark with regard to COVID. Osterholm's comments line up closely with the latest national report from the New York Times, which is Minnesota leading the nation in 67 cases per 100,000 people. New Mexico, 64 cases as opposed to 65, which he said. Minnesota's case rate per 100,000 has more than doubled in the past 2 weeks, increasing by 54%. The hottest spots in Minnesota, based on the New York Times case count per 100,000 people. What I know where it's going to be. It's going to be those liberal hotbeds of Hennepin and Ramsey County. Liberals, you just got owned. Actually, no. No, it's not those areas. It's not the liberal counties. It's Wadena County, Dodge County, Mille Lacs County, and Kanabec County. I'm starting to see a sense of theme here. These four aforementioned counties are ranked among the 10 highest county case rates in the country. Of the 100 highest case rates nationally, 20 are from Minnesota, per the New York Times. So once again, I would like to say, There are 50 states. If they're going with the 100 highest counties, we should have two of them if we're average. We're 10 times that bad right now with 20. Which counties? Number three on the hit parade is Wadena County, 164 cases per 100,000 people. That's insane. Dodge County, 126. Mille Lacs County, 126. Goodhue County, 124. Kennebec County is 116. Douglas County, 112. Itasca County, 106. Pope County, 105. Hubbard County is at 99. Todd County at 98. Beltrami County, 97. Benton County, 95. Wright County, 91. Kandiyohi County, 91. Meeker County, 90. Sherburne County, 90. Clay County, 90. Isanti County, 89. Morrison County, 87. And Otterdale County, 85. All of those counties, every single one of them, is in the top 100 worst counties in the country for COVID right now. 20 conservative Republican rural outstate counties where the Republican Party is so far saying nothing to get their people vaccinated. Nothing, once again. I have not heard of a press release. I have not heard of Republicans going out, oh my God, this is horrific. This is horrific. We need to get people out there. Nope. Have not heard the Republican Party or anyone from the Republican Party come on out there and say, geez, okay, enough's enough. We got to get vaccinated. By the way, speaking of vaccination, the majority of the counties listed above are among the counties with the lowest vaccination rates based on residents having at least one dose in the state. Here's where the 20 counties, these are the 20 counties on that list of the 100 worst counties in the country. 20 of them are from Minnesota. Here's where those 20 counties with the worst COVID rates right now currently rank in Minnesota in terms of their total vaccination rates out of 87 counties. Okay. Wadena, which is the worst, is 85th out of 87 counties with only 43.2% vaccinated. You fools. Dodge County is 23rd. Mille Lacs is at 84. Goodhue County is at 15th. Kennebec County is at 83rd. Douglas County is 33rd. Itasca County is 38th. Pope County is 53rd. Hubbard County is 59th. Todd County is 86th. Beltrami County, 35th. Benton County, 78th. Wright County, 54th. Kandiyohi County, 61st. Meeker County, 79th. Sherburne County, 77th. Clay County, 43rd. Isanti County, 80th. Morrison County, 82nd. Otterdale County is at 51st. Nine of the 11 counties with the lowest vaccination rates are in the list of 100 highest county case rates in the entire country. None of the 14 Minnesota counties with the highest vaccination rates, which includes the whole seven county metro area, are on that list. So none of the 14 counties with the highest vaccination rates, which is including the seven counties in the Twin Cities metro, the Liberal Haven. Nope, we're not on that list. Not one of them. Not a single one. This is a challenge. We still have large segments of the Minnesota population, for example, that are unvaccinated. We have counties in the 40% level of vaccination. We still have a lot of kids who have not been vaccinated. Ulster Home continues. So there's still a tremendous amount of human wood out there for this coronavirus forest fire to burn. Breakthrough cases are happening through Ulster Home notes that while vaccinated people can still get COVID, they're much less likely to become seriously ill and die than those who are unvaccinated. Ulster Home also notes that someone who has previously had COVID-19 is less likely to get infected again compared to an unvaccinated person who has never had COVID due to the level of natural immunity they've acquired. However, a recent CDC study found that being vaccinated provides more robust and consistent protection than natural immunity. The best is if you've had it, you've got the natural immunity, and then you get vaccinated, you almost very rarely see anyone getting sick in that category. Unbelievable. And then on top of that, might we add that we talked about if you have to go to the hospital and you don't need a ventilator or an ICU room, your average cost is going to be $44,000. But if you need a ventilator or an ICU room, you're looking at $140,000. I'm going to bet a lot of those people in the counties I mentioned a little bit earlier, Wadena, Dodge, Mille Lacs, Goodhue, Kennebec, Douglas, as well as also Itasca, Pope, Hubbard, Todd, Beltrami, Benton, Wright, Kandiyohi, Meeker, Sherburne, Clay, Isanti, Morrison and Otter Tail. I'm going to guess a lot of people in those counties don't have a little extra $150,000 just lying around for a medical bill that they didn't expect to have. Sure, they all have that there. Because that's all the wealth, isn't it? That's where it is right there. I don't want you sick, I don't want you dead, and I don't want you bankrupt. And you guys are, once again, your mentality is, well, we'll show you, and yes, you are. Fools. Fools. Just fools. Matt is in South Minneapolis, wants to chime in on the COVID stuff. Welcome on in, Matt.
Well, welcome back. I'm sure you missed that cardboard cutout of Steve Lindell. Mike Lindell.
Oh, yes. I was so excited. I was ready to go to the concourse over at Minneapolis St. Paul and run around naked with him and headbutt some TVs.
Well, that's a good laughing point, but now it's hit home. I had two performers that are very, very sick. One of them's really, really sick, and they were vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of one of those things where you can still get vaccinated, and it's not that you can't die, and it's not that you can't get really sick. It's just it's more unlikely, very much unlikely, that you're going to if you have vaccinations. As a matter of fact, I'll get into those numbers here in the second half hour. But all my best to them. Are they good friends of yours?
Well, they both are performers in different groups that I perform with.
Oh, well, I hope they do better.
Yeah. And then other than that, I just want to chime in on the Rittenhouse thing. You know, I deeply think that he's going to be let off. But you know what? I will bet diamonds for dollars that he will go out and do it again.
Matt, thank you very much. I think he's going to be like Zimmerman. I honestly think he's going to be like Zimmerman. Thanks for the phone call. I appreciate that. And all my best to people out there. I don't want you sick. I don't want you dead. And I don't want you bankrupt. I don't know if these performers that with, if they've got pre-existing conditions that make them a little more susceptible. But I can tell you right now is if people would just get vaccinated, then we would not have the problems that we have. And once again, you have people, I don't know at what point when you're playing chicken with a force that's not going to change their path, that you just decide, I'm just going to let it hit me and be done with it. But the reality is you're going to die. There's a decent chance you could die. For God's sakes, you fools, get vaccinated. The same, let's just make sure we cut the crud here. The same people who are out there refusing last year were out there saying, I can't wait for Donald Trump to get out with the vaccine. Like Trump is working in the lab himself in a lab coat, you know, holding up beakers and looking at them and like, oh, looks like we got the solution here. You all were like that last year. Every single one of you was like that, saying it was. Brett, you were, I think, sitting on the other side of that glass from me. We made the comment that of all the things that Trump had done that had been horrible, I wanted to give him credit because him getting rid of the regulations to streamline the effect, to allow these companies to develop these vaccines as quick as they did, that was a good thing. We praised him. I told you, mark the tape. We praised Trump that the fact that his administration, not necessarily Trump himself, but his administration, did get rid of the red tape. And you guys were all praising it. And then the minute that Joe Biden became the president, all of a sudden you're like, you can't trust it. It makes you glow and you levitate and your blood turns green and you become magnetized. And I'd rather go take horse dewormer designed for horses and jam it up my caboose because that's science. I don't know what happened to you, but for God's sakes, remember the Republican that you were in October of 2020 when you were vowing to get Trump's vaccine. You couldn't wait for it. If you want to consider that Trump's vaccine, then do and go get it. I don't want you sick. I don't want you dead. I didn't curse the creation of this vaccine because Donald Trump was the president. I was hopeful. I was praying. But because he needs you angry and fighting and distrusting, you fools, sit there and act as if you're somehow a nuanced argument when you're basically a fart joke. get vaccinated. Please. 952-946-6205. I'll tell you what, I came across some numbers that I got to, I'll share with those coming back after we come back from the break, as well as also more on the Minnesota coronavirus update. Yeah, there's more. There's more. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Yeah, this is starting to stink. It's like I said, this is a pandemic due to ignorance. This is ignorance, and Republicans who are feeding upon that ignorance, they're willing to basically encourage behavior that will kill their voters, just so they can look like they're making a point, making a standing. I have never seen anything like this in this country. I mean, this is a doomsday cult. The Republican Party has become a freaking doomsday cult. I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. I don't want you bankrupt. And once again, it's the mentality from the right is, we'll show you, and you are. Mounting COVID hospitalizations are placing enormous strain on Minnesota's small rural hospitals. As cases continue and heavily occupy available hospital bed capacity, Sauk Center is a town of about 4,000 people. Dr. Alika Wigert with Sauk Center Care Sauk Center, usually we take care of, before COVID-19, about 5 to 6 patients in our hospital a day, said Dr. Wigert. We are seeing COVID-19 patients that are much sicker, and numbers are up to 13 or 14 patients in the hospital at a time that are stretching our capacity. As of last week, COVID-19 hospitalizations across the state increased to 1,245, with close to 300 needing intensive care, the highest it's been for the year. We are all full. It's not getting better, said Minnesota Nurses Association President Mary Turner. Turner says the same can be said of hospitals in the metro area. Hospital groups like CentraCare say although there were staffing challenges before the pandemic, the strains of the past 20 months have made things worse. We don't have the same amount of nurses that we had a year ago. I'm speaking for a very small critical access hospital across our state. Dr. Wigert says it's difficult to find available ICU beds, with some hospitals up to 85 miles away reaching out for available space. We did have a medical patient said that they didn't have capacity to admit their facility from Montevideo here in Sauk Center, said Dr. Wigert. Hospital staff said that they are open and ready to take care of sick patients. They're urging people to stay safe and get vaccinated. We want to know what people are doing, what they can support us by being smart through this, said Dr. Wigert. So, yeah, once again, you don't have the medical infrastructure in rural Minnesota to deal with this crisis. You do not have the ability to go to your local small doctor's office with 30 sick people in a day and expect there's going to be any level of good care. And let alone, let's talk about this. If you are in any of those counties that we mentioned earlier, Wadena, Dodge, Mille Lacs, Goodhue, Kennebec, Douglas, and the rest, how are you feeling right now if you've got a heart condition? Or, you know, you hear, oh my God, your kid got into a car accident? Yeah, their child is being air flown to Madison, Wisconsin, because that's the nearest available ICU bed. They're going to Mason City, Iowa. You keep trying to prove a case you can't win. Not because I'm right and I'm wrong. It's just because I understand science. And science is, you can't negotiate with a freaking virus. You keep saying to yourself, I'm going to lick every freaking doorknob in this business, and then you're surprised that you get sick. You can't do this. You are killing yourselves. You are killing your neighbors. You are destroying your medical system in rural Minnesota. All for what? What are you successfully proving here? They're your idiots. Mission accomplished. tenfold. Get vaccinated. Just get vaccinated. It brought up an interesting question because there's a story from bringing the news from this weekend that talked about vaccinations and people that have had cases, number of breakthrough cases and stuff like this through vaccinations. And the number of vaccine breakthrough cases, the total cases was 64,844 out of the total amount of cases, which is, you know, was the percentage of fully vaccinated people was only 2.15%. Total cases hospitalized and vaccinated was only 2,956, which is 0.092%, and total deaths was 483, which is 0.015. And I made the point, 99.985% of people vaccinated have not died from COVID. Think about it that way. 99.985% of people vaccinated have not died from COVID. 99.91% of people who have been vaccinated have not been hospitalized. This is just for Minnesota. This is just for Minnesota. And once again, I understand you might not be that smart. 100 is the top goal. You can't get higher than 100. So if I'm at 99.985, I'm pretty close to 100% safe. I'm pretty close. I'm not there completely, but I'm pretty close. If I'm at 99.91%, I'm really close to that 100%. But then I had someone ask the question, curious, what would be the percentage for the unvaxxed who claiming it's not that dangerous? Well, so what did Matt do? You know, crutch boy before I went out and decided to try to, you know, get up all the leaves with my leaf blower with a crutch, which mission accomplished. Thank you very much. I wasn't on a ladder or anything like that. I mean, I was on a ladder with a crutch and a snowblower. What could go wrong?
Trying to get yourself on Bring Me the News.
Rough math. Now, so when I went out there and said, I took, first of all, I took the number of people who are unvaccinated, okay, total vaccinated, which you find in the population of the state. You take the numbers, and I talk about the numbers all the time, every morning here. So if you take the population of the state, 3.56 million, you minus the people that are fully vaccinated, you get 2,328,000 unvaccinated, which includes all 0 to 5-year-olds who are not eligible for vaccine, which also includes all people who've only gotten one dose of vaccine, not the full vaccine double dose, and all the 5 to 11-year-olds who are currently on the waiting list to get vaccinated. So these numbers are actually going to help them because, you know, 0 to 5 has a lesser chance of getting it, and that you've got people that have already gotten one vaccination shot and are, if they're in the process of waiting for their second one, they're going to be helped. But so, but it's everyone that's not fully vaccinated in the state of Minnesota. Matt's math corner here. 2,328,000. And I rounded that number up. If you basically take the numbers from the Minnesota... The Minnesota story here, the total number of cases of people that breakthrough, 64,000. And you minus that from all the rest of the cases. So because that would be the case, wouldn't it be? You know, these would be cases that even if it was someone that got sick and got vaccinated before they were vaccinated, got sick, they were unvaccinated, that would be an illness that would show up in the unvaccinated column. But if then they got vaccinated and then got sick again, well, then they would show up in the vaccinated. So basically, it should be pretty cut and dry. There's no overlap here. If you take the 64,844 minus that from the total amount of people who have been sick, well, you start factoring the numbers in with the base number being 2,328,000 people who are unvaccinated. Here's where this gets terra-freaking-fying, okay? Here's where it gets terra-freaking-fying. All right. I gotta watch my freakings. I gotta watch that. If you are unvaccinated, now this has been the entire run of COVID, even pre-vaccine, but this is just the number. If you are unvaccinated, 33% got sick. 16.3 times higher than the rate that's vaccinated. I want to repeat that. One third of all unvaccinated people have gotten sick. Of all the cases, a third, it's one out of every three of you is getting sick. Not one out of every 50, which is for vaccinated. One out of every 50 vaccinated gets a breakthrough case. One out of every three who's unvaccinated is getting sick. 2% of the unvaccinated have been hospitalized, which is 22.2 times higher than the vaccinated rate. 2% of unvaccinated people have been hospitalized. 2% have had to go to the hospital. 22.2 times higher than the amount of vaccinated people that have had to go to the hospital. 0.3% died. And I know you'll sit there and say, well, that's not that many. It's still 20 times higher than the amount of people who have died that have been vaccinated. 20 times. The number of people who have been vaccinated who have died, 0.015%. 0.015%. That's an exact 20 times. You are 20 times more likely to die from COVID if you're unvaccinated. One in three gets sick. These aren't lies. This is math. And I'll stand by the numbers. As a matter of fact, I'll do a blog post on Progressive Citizen X. I'll run through the numbers. One out of every three of you unvaccinated fools get sick. One out of every three. I don't want you sick. I don't want you dead. And you seem to be trying to get that number up to one out of every two, or even worse. The numbers don't lie. Get vaccinated. If you're unvaccinated, you are 16.3 times more likely to get sick. If you're unvaccinated, you are 22.2 times more likely to go to the hospital. If you're not vaccinated, you're 20 times more likely to die than the vaccinated people are. This is a man-made crisis fueled by stupidity. Go get vaccinated, please. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. So I want to make sure, because I think it's important to say this about these numbers. When you say this, you know, one third of all people who are unvaccinated have been sick. 2% of the people who are unvaccinated have been hospitalized. When you're looking at these numbers, you have to remind her that these numbers are already positive for them, because that also includes 0 to 5-year-olds. It includes the people who are 5 to 11 who are in the process of trying to get vaccinated. And it also includes all the people that have gotten one vaccine shot but haven't gotten their second one yet. On top of that, I mean, you're saying to yourself, well, Matt, how'd you come up with the numbers here? How'd you come up with the math? Well, it's relatively easy to do so. All you have to do is take the number of, say, total cases minus the 64,844 that were breakthrough cases, okay? Then take the number of people who are unvaccinated, which was 2,328,000, including the 0 to 5-year-olds, including the people that are not fully vaccinated with only one shot in them. And you take the number that's remaining of cases, divide it by 2,328,000, and guess what? There you get your numbers. And I actually went back, Brett, and I redid these numbers three times because I kept coming up with one out of every three, and I said, that can't be that bad. But it is.
And again, what was the number again for the vaccinated? Their likelihood?
The likelihood for the vaccinated to get sick was the likelihood of getting sick was 2%. So basically
2%.
It was 97.98 85, 97.985% of people who are vaccinated have not had a breakthrough case. 97.985 have not gotten sick. As I like, as I said, the number of people who have not been hospitalized is 99.91%. The number of people vaccinated who have not died is 99.985. And so you run these numbers comparatively and you say to yourself, well, 66% of people didn't get sick. Yeah, but one out of every three did. That's atrocious. And this is concentrated. You have to remind yourself that one of the things that's helping these numbers in outstate Minnesota is that Minneapolis-St. Paul is not that bad, where the vast majority of the population is. You have to go on out there. I mean, you really want to understand how bad things are. I've said this for the last few weeks, as these Republicans like to sit there and they talk about, there was a gang shooting in Minneapolis. It's so dangerous in the city. Oh, my God. I would rather be in Minneapolis-St. Paul instead of the petri dish that is your Republican counties in outstate Minnesota. You guys seem to be desperate to kill those people. And it's not one shooting here or there. It's five people sick every, or five people, 10, 15 people sick every single day. Two or three dying every single day. Every single day. No, it is much safer in Minneapolis-St. Paul right now than it is in outstate Minnesota. 2% of all unvaccinated people, 2% have been hospitalized. 2%. That's insane. That's 22.2% higher than the vaccination rate. And I'm going to go back to something I said earlier in the show about Alex Jones, where all you psychopathic nutbags that thought that the shooting in Newtown, the Sandy Hook shooting, was a false flag operation to collect guns. How many years afterwards, where the guns aren't being collected, do you have to sit back and say, oh, I guess that wasn't the case? Let me apply that to you morons with the vaccine who say, it's going to kill you all. Where are the morgues full to the rim with dead vaccinated people? It doesn't exist. It just doesn't. And the more people are getting vaccinated, the less your theories and your deranged psychopathic theories that you were pulling out of the same place you're injecting your ivermectin, the crazier they sound. At what point are you going to realize, wow, have we been wrong? It's a good day to become that person. It's a good day to admit you're wrong. Go get vaccinated, for God's sakes. Native Roots Radio is up next. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.